Hey everyone, my name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses. And you might have noticed that there's this theme that I've picked up on in my interviews anyway, which is that entrepreneurs who find a pain in the world, a problem that people have, and start to create solutions for it end up doing better than ones who just have ideas and start to implement those ideas. And that's what happened to today's guest. He was a salesperson who worked in the field. That means that he was driving around talking to customers. He had trouble finding out where people were, how to get to the right people at the right time. And he said, you know what? There ought to be a solution. And then he created the solution. That solution is called Badger Maps. If you're out there doing sales, you can appreciate the significance of this. It makes it easy for you to figure out where your prospects are on the map and how close they are to you. His name is Steven Benson. Steven, you're smiling because of the way I'm describing it.
Yeah, no, that's great. That's perfect. Yeah, we in a nutshell, we help field salespeople, and I love the thought that that companies that are founded by people that are kind of scratching their own itch tend to do better because they really understand their customers. It's definitely an advantage.
Yeah, as long as they make sure that other people have the same problem and the same pain as them. So, for example, and I should say this interview is sponsored by the company that will host your website, right? It's called HostGator, and by the company that will help you hire your next great developer. I hired a great finance guy from them. I'll tell you all about them, both sponsors, later. First, I got to tell you, speaking of pain, by the way, Steven, this past weekend, I got a one-year-old. He's starting to really, jump around and enjoy himself. So we put the cushion from the couch that's in his bedroom on the floor, and I started, throwing him on the floor. And, he loved it because I was throwing him on a little, it's not much of a cushion. It's from a couch, the back cushion, but enough for him. He loved it so much, I freaking threw myself on it. I said, I got to see how fun this is. I threw myself on there too, and I realized, whoa, the ground is way too close. I totally hurt my back. Man, I cannot imagine that there are a lot of people who have this stupid problem. So I wouldn't necessarily come up with a solution for it, how to throw yourself on your kid's floor without getting hurt. But when there's a problem that many people experience and you're the first person to experience it and you experience it firsthand, I feel like there's a power to it. Why don't we get into who you are for a second and then how you discovered it. You were a regional sales manager for Google when you kind of came up with this problem. What were you selling for Google?
So at Google, I was on the enterprise team. So I focused on their the products that they sell to companies, from a software perspective. So not their Google Ads and the Google AdSense, the things that they're big products that you've heard of, but instead things like Gmail. Mm-hmm. They have some security services. They have a search appliance, which helps businesses kind of search, kind of like what Google.com does, but for their a business's internal mm-hmm. stuff. And then the Google Maps API. And my biggest focus, especially towards the end of when I was at Google the last year there, was the Google Maps API. That's what I was really zoomed in on.
And who are you selling it to and why?
So the Google Maps API is sold to people that what it is basically everyone knows what Google Maps is. If they go to maps.google.com, they can use this awesome mapping tool as a consumer. But Google also has a product that allows people to consume maps and put it in other products, like maybe their website. So maybe you have a website with a bunch of stores, and you want to show people where all those stores are and give them directions to the stores. If you're a big company, you have to pay Google for that, and so. So all the maps you see around the internet, and whenever you see maps inside of an application in general, that the company doing that is paying Google. And so that was my responsibility, was to sell that solution to companies that needed it.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. As a guy who went to business school, was it ridiculous that you left and then decided I'm going to go into sales?
Yeah, that was a little ridiculous. I mean, it's not a common path out of business school, I think, for people to go into sales. Although, and for a lot of reasons, I think a lot, in general, people that went to business school tend to gravitate towards more analytical focused jobs like consulting, finance, strategy, things like that.
So why'd you go to sales?
Well, because it was the right fit for me.
Because you feel in your bones you're a salesperson.
Yeah, I was looking at all the different options out of business school, and it was just really attractive to me. It's what I wanted to do, and so it was the most interesting to me, and it seemed the most fun, and so I just and it was just a natural fit for me. It's where I kind of saw myself going, and you know, so that's the direction I went.
I get it. I kind of feel like every business school and even undergraduate schools that teach business students, they should just force you to do some kind of sales or understand it. You know, like you just like a owner of a factory should walk the factory floor and understand how the different parts are made to get it before they get to run the factory. I feel like the same thing should be true for business school students. Now, you're a guy who just had it in your bones. You told our producer that you had a business when you were 13, kind of similar to what I had when I was 13. What was that business?
So I guess I had a couple, but I think the one that jumped off the page at her, is this on the record? I was selling fireworks and soda at school. So I would, on the way to school, I would swing by the grocery store and get a 30 pack of soda and bike it to school in my lap. And then those cans were probably like 12 cents each. And I would sell them for like $1 to $1.50, depending on who I was selling it to. But the more lucrative business was in the state that I was in, you couldn't buy fireworks, or I guess they just weren't on sale. There were no fireworks stores, but you could have them mailed to you. So I was having them mailed to me, and then I was selling them to friends and stuff.
What state was this?
Illinois.
Okay. You can actually get it mailed to you.
Yeah, I guess, you know, and I mean – I'm not sure if the companies that were mailing it to me were allowed to mail it, but they were sending them. And so,
you know, I did a little bit of that, but I had older friends who would then go to Chinatown. They would buy it from Chinatown for themselves. I would buy some for them and I would sell it. And I remember one time I was such a like eager 10-year-old, and the 13-year-olds told me, yeah, we can sell it. Just put your money in the bathroom so that nobody knows that we're making the drop. You put your mountain money behind the toilet in the bathroom, and then we'll pick it up and we'll replace it with the fireworks, and it'll be hidden for you. Kind of like a drug deal. I hope I wasn't stupid enough to do it, but I know that I was eager enough to at least have considered it. Okay, so you're doing this at Google, coming back to more closely to present day. And there was this time when you were out there selling, you were in Kansas City, and you thought about doing something but didn't. Talk about that.
Sure. Well, this is kind of where this was a frustration point that kind of pushed me over the edge into saying, hey, this is a real problem that someone should take care of. And so I was basically I had a meeting with an executive in Kansas City that I was flying into. I live in San Francisco and did at the time. So I was flying into to Kansas City to meet with this executive. And I knew there was another executive that I had to meet with that was in another town. So the layout of Kansas is basically there's Kansas City, and then there's this other town, Olathe, which I thought was a suburb of Wichita, which is the capital of Kansas, and it's, you know, 2-3 hours away, I forget. But I thought that Olathe was next to Wichita, but Olathe was next to Kansas City. And so I was thinking, oh, I've got to come back soon. I've got my afternoon free, but I've got to fly back here soon anyway because I've got to meet this other guy. You know, I have to drive over here. And I just hadn't looked Olathe up on a map, and I didn't know, you know, I probably had 40 prospective customers in the area, and I just didn't know where they were, and I just hadn't had a chance to really organize it because it's, you know, it takes time, and I was kind of in a rush. And so I flew into town, met with this guy, and then went back to the airport and was kind of working at the airport, and I was going to plan my next trip to Kansas, and I was seeing, oh, where is this in relation to Wichita? And then I realized it was like 20 minutes away from where I was or where I had been meeting with this first guy. Olathe is right outside of Kansas City. So I was like, now I've got to drive. Now, I could have been spending that time meeting this guy too if I had just known and thought about it.
Basically, so you thought you're a couple hours away from this one potential client. Instead, mm-hmm. you were basically 10 minutes away, if that. And if you'd known that ahead of time, you would have gone to see the client. I'm so surprised that Google at the time didn't have a solution for this. I'm so surprised. You're telling me that all the sales software that exists out in the world didn't do this? That there was nothing that would allow you to that would tell you, no, hey, Steven, you're close to a customer?
That's the problem we solved. And it actually ended up being a lot more complex than just that. And a lot of people had a much bigger problem than I had. So I could have gotten a couple more meetings, and just in general, it was the type of sales role wasn't meeting with 10 people a day. It was meeting with 3 people a week, and most then a lot of meetings over the phone, et cetera. But like actual in-person meeting with executives, as opposed to like someone that sells stuff to dentists or sells stuff to restaurants, you know, they meet with a lot of, if you sell stuff to dentists, for example, you meet with a lot of dentists because there's a lot of dentists, and you sell a thing that they, a med device or whatever that they need to use. And you just end up with, you know, 8-10 meetings a day. They had a much bigger routing problem and scheduling problem and kind of figuring out who to focus on problem than I ever did in my role. So I ended up solving my problem, but I figured out that there were people that had it had a way bigger problem than I did, and so they were kind of the early adopters of our software.
And that took a little while to understand. At first, you said, you know what, I have this need. Maybe this could be a business idea. And you spent some time evaluating it. How did you evaluate whether this would be the right idea for you?
Well, that's an interesting question. So what I did was, you know, so I set out to solve problems that businesses had that you could solve with geography and mapping. And the reason I was doing that was because at the time, mapping had just gone mobile. So the Google Maps API was really starting to be able to quickly deliver mapping capabilities to a mobile phone. The internet on mobile phones had gotten fast enough that it was really useful. Cloud computing through Amazon had become really allowed you to kind of do heavyweight computing anywhere and mobily. So all these things were kind of happening at the same time, and the confluence of which I was like, there's a bunch of business problems that we'll be able to solve. This one that I experienced, but also other problems. And there were about 4 business ideas that I had. Well, 4 product ideas that I had that I was like, oh, I'll start this company, and I'll solve all those problems. But really, it turns out that software is very hard to build, and so I ended up starting with what I thought was the most important problem. Like I laid out and evaluated all the problems that I could solve, started out with the one that seemed like it had the biggest market, was the most painful, etc. And but really the other ideas were almost as good or maybe even better.
What were the other ones?
One someone's kind of already done now at this point, but it was to provide big companies with maps of their campuses and buildings that could act, that if someone kind of like an almost like an internal Facebook, but mapping everyone out. So like, where is this person's desk? And if you work for a company that has 10,000 people, knowing where someone is, being able to bring up all their information, being able to book conference rooms in the area of like being like, oh, I need a conference room with these characteristics, at least 12, if you see at least 12 people, has this type of AV equipment, and is in around this, you know, a 2-minute walk from this one
kind of like Yelp for conference rooms.
Exactly. Yeah,
in addition to a location for people. So within the office, if I needed to know where my boss was, I could look at it on a map and see it.
Right. Well, and you probably know where your boss's desk is, but like this random person that you have a meeting with or something or this person you want to swing by their desk, you might not know where they sit and what building they're in, et cetera. So it's almost like a map of a company map, basically.
I could see that. And you know what? I go to my wife's office. She works at Yahoo and was recently acquired by AOL, which was acquired by Verizon. There's a ton of people there.
Oh, yeah,
I know
yeah.
She doesn't know who people are because, oh, you know, sure. they keep switching around. And for all she knows, the person she's been contacting and talking with via email or Slack on a regular basis is like just a few desks away.
Right.
I get that. And so you decided not to go after that because you were thinking, where's the bigger market, or was it something else?
Well, I guess I chose to solve the problem that field salespeople have, or the problems that field salespeople have, because there's a lot of field salespeople. They're a really important group of people in that the you know, a business cares how efficient their salespeople are and are willing to pay to make them more efficient to solve their problems, have them get more done in a day because it translates to more sales. So.
Okay.
That solving their problem seemed very important. And it's not like the other things that I was looking at, it's not like they weren't they were also important problems, but I felt like this one would be able to sit more saleable, bigger market, that sort of thing. So I guess the next thing I did was I built a spreadsheet of all the industries that I could think I forget how I did this, but 150 or so industries that are the main industries. And then I down one column in the spreadsheet, you know, down the side, and then across the top, across the top all the different roles in the company and kind of identifying who are the people that really have power to solve these types of problems and who would be interested. And then trying to figure out who do I know in all these industries that I could talk to get introduced to the people that have these certain roles. So like talking to a sales ops person in the pharmaceutical industry and talking to a VP of sales in the med device industry. So kind of figuring out where I should target.
If I'm going after sales, where are all the industries that have salespeople and what are the different roles that I might be able to get access to? Because I see, so you were making a hit list. Was it for sales or for understanding what your customer would want?
The point was to understand what the best industries were to go after. Because when you solve a new problem, you know, maybe imagine there's 10 million field salespeople in America. Some of them were like me when I was at Google that wouldn't have this problem that bad. It's an annoyance. It would be helpful for them, but it's not. It's an annoyance. It's not like a head wound. There are other salespeople who, because of the nature of their job, this is a huge problem that I'm solving. And you want to figure out who those people are, in what industries, who the people who cares at those companies about these people, who has the power to do something, and get to know these types of get to know the industry so that you can figure out who do I sell to first, who do I go after first, because your early adopters, you know, when you've built the thing. You start solving a problem, you solve the most basic aspects of it first, right? So for us, it was putting customers, giving someone a tool to, within a browser on their computer, put their customers on a map and then colorize by different characteristics. And that came before routing, that came before scheduling, that came before lead generation, that came before switching it to mobile as well. But at its core, the first thing we did was we're going to show you where your customers are on a map and give you the ability to say what type of customer is this, colorize that in this color versus that color. And that was the most basic thing that we did.
Let me pause the conversation right now. I'm curious when we come back after this spot about how what you asked these people and what you learned that directed you towards this. Colorizing on a map, I never would have thought would have been an issue. But the advertiser I want to talk about is TopTal. Have you heard of TopTal? I don't think you have yet.
I have not. That's the hiring one. Yeah.
Yeah. So get this. I've talked for years about how you can hire a developer from there, and they have top developers. They're known for developers. They also do designers. They have top designers, but they're mostly known for developers. What I hadn't talked about until I really got into it is they're finance people. And here's the deal. Have you ever heard that people say that entrepreneurship is a lonely business? It's a lonely activity. I've heard that. You have. Do you feel
for
that
sure.
way, by the way?
It is. Yeah. I mean,
what do you mean when you say that?
I think that it's a lonely activity because no one really understands what you're doing exactly. For the most part, I mean, other entrepreneurs do, but you have a team that are also doing it with you. And if you building the team is the way you make it less lonely, but especially in the beginning, like it's hard for other people to really connect with what you do the way if you meet an accountant, you really understand what does this accountant do? You can grasp that. It's very hard to. I think for people to empathize with the types of risks entrepreneurs take and how hard it is to build something from nothing.
Yeah, I get that. There aren't a lot of people who feel what we feel, who experience what we feel. Like if you're, yeah, I get it. You know what else is about it? You're also alone with a lot of the problems. So for me, for example, this sounds so petty, but it's an example of the kinds of issues that I'm alone with. Am I spending too much on contractors? Like, I have to figure it out by myself. Who else? Am I going to go show all the contractors? Am I going to go put it online and say, here's what I'm paying? It's really hard. I have to decide that on my own. Do I have too many or not enough because I'm being too much of a wuss and not hiring enough contractors? That's an issue. Another one is, did I structure my company right? Am I paying too much for my credit card processing? Because credit card's a big part of our business. All these things I have to decide on my own. I have to go sit through everyone's paperwork on my own. It was freaking maddening. So I finally decided I was going to try TopTal's finance department. They introduced me to a guy who used to work with McKinsey. He was a partner at McKinsey. He's now later on in his career. He came on. And now a lot of the problems, a lot of the decisions, it's not just me. I'm not dealing with them alone anymore. It's me and him. I get to say to him, hey, look, you know what? The credit card company offered me this. Does this make sense? This guy is insane. He went through every bit of their fee structure. They actually – did you know this, Stephen? That the credit card companies will charge you a different price based on which card your customer uses. So if they're using airline mile card, you get charged a higher price than if they're using one without any loyalty points. If they're charging for the – you knew this?
No, I didn't know that. I actually don't know how all that stuff works.
I had no idea, and I don't have the patience to sit through it, but I know if I understand it, I can negotiate better and I could reduce my fees. So I gave it – I told him about it. I didn't even – give him this rate structure. He couldn't help, but he said, give me access to them. So I added him on to my credit card processing account without like the ability to take money out because I'm very like suspicious of everybody, even though this guy's helping me. Mm-hmm. He called him up. He got the whole rate card. He started explaining the whole process to me, and he gave me what numbers we should be looking for. And suddenly, am I saving millions of dollars by changing it? No, but it was one phone call, one negotiation. Am I going to save $10,000 this year? I'd say about $10,000. Let's say within the next year. Little decisions like that are no longer just on my head. Decisions like what's another one that he was telling me about? Oh, here's a petty one. Health insurance premium. What should I be doing? Like, anyway, all this stuff. A lot of people who are listening to me don't have these issues at all, but I'll tell you what you might have if you're listening to me. Pricing. What should you be charging? You have to figure this stuff out by yourself. Or maybe you're putting together a spreadsheet for a potential customer or a spreadsheet for potential investors, and you have to sit and figure this whole thing out by yourself. I got to tell you guys, you do not have to be alone anymore with the business decisions that you have to face as an entrepreneur. Go to TopTal. They have the top MBAs, the top finance people in their network. Just tell them what you're looking for. If it's a good fit, they'll tell you, and they'll match you with three different people who will actually help you, and you decide if you want to work with one or them or not. If it's not a good fit, they'll tell you, and then you could complain to me because I promoted something that you're not even allowed to sign up for. Totally understand it. A lot of people have been turned away, but I got to tell you, if you're not, if it's a good fit for you, it will change the way you run your business. Go to toptal.com/Mixergy, and they're going to give you a special offer that they're making only available to Mixergy people. I swear by them. Now, the guy I work with, by the way, is Jack. If you really want a great person, just say Jack. Jack, who used to work for McKinsey. So freaking phenomenal. So good. All right, go sign up. Let me know how it works. And don't forget, they also offer a no-risk trial period of up to 2 weeks. If you go to toptal.com/Mixergy, top is on top of your head, talisintalent.com/Mixergy. It's kind of a public service announcement, what I'm doing right there. All right. So coming back to your story, you were starting to understand who was out there, and you wanted to talk to them to get an understanding of what to create. I'm curious about what they told you that helped you understand that you should be doing this color coding thing, because that's not at all where I thought you were going to go with colorizing prospects.
Right. So basically, and this is kind of a part of like figuring out what direction you should take a company. You have to figure out who are the best 2%, like, so if you're looking at that 10 million people who you think ultimately are in this market of people that you'd want to solve their problems, who are like where are the 100 or 1,000 of them that are the ones that are going to need it the absolute most, the first 0.2% that the earliest problems you can solve, even solving those in their most basic form will be really valuable to them, because those are the people that are going to buy it first, and they'll be thrilled as you keep adding more and more stuff, and that will actually make it worth enough for other people to get in the boat. But those early people are really important because they're the early adopters, right? They have a bleeding head wound, and you can solve it, and they just want to stop the blood. It's not a scratch, it's not an itch. It's like, this is a big problem for us, and we will work with a crappy little startup, and you know, we'll deal with the bumps and lumps. And this is 6 years ago, right? We were a tiny company, so if someone jumping in the boat, then there's issues with the product, there's bugs, there's things that they want, we can't build them yet because it's, you know, we only have two engineers, things like that. Figuring out who those people are and how you can find them,
if they're experiencing deep pain, it doesn't take much to alleviate that pain and therefore get their business. That's what you're thinking.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. And so you kind of have to figure out, where are these people? And so I made a list of all these different all these industries and tried to figure out, do they have field salespeople or not? And if they do, who do I know in these industries that I can talk to and kind of try to figure out, are these the types of field salespeople that have the biggest problems in this area, that if I solve the most basic aspect of it, that they'd want to have it? And so we like dentistry is one example, right? So people that sell stuff to dentists, they there are different types of dentists that focus on different types of things, and there's a lot of dentists. And so if you're a salesperson covering, you know, the New York area or the Los Angeles area, and your job is to get in front of all the dentists there, like it's very, with your type of product, it's very important that you can kind of figure out who to focus on and and being able to see, and where are they, right?
How can you tell if someone has a deep pain by just talking to them? What are you figuring out that tells you this is someone who has deep pain?
Well, I think you have to get to know them. You have to build the relationship. You have to have a conversation about it, and you do have to ask them. Like, it's hard to quantify pain, right? It's like you can't just be like, "Hey, on a scale of 1 to 10, how bad does it hurt when I poke here?" It's the key is, does it hurt enough that if I solved just this, you can lay out the whole vision. You can be like, "Hey, I'm going to build this. I'm going to build this. I'm going to build this. I'm going to build, you know, piece A, piece B, piece C, piece D, all the way on to Z." But if I just built piece A, would that be worth it enough for you to pay me this much money? And, you know, like if the answer is no, tell me no, because I'm trying to figure out, you know, if this is even worth building. And if they're like, "Oh yeah, that's a no-brainer. I would totally buy that if you would build it." Figuring out who those people are is really important. And what would the process? Understanding what would the process be for you to buy something like this? Like, is it if you're talking to the VP of sales operations, do they need to get to the VP of sales sign off? Do they need to get the trainers sign off? What would the process look like? Who would be involved? And then talking to all those people and really getting to know this type of customer.
I see. So just to break it down, you're saying, look, if a little bit of solution will solve so much of their pain that they'd be willing to pay for it, that means there's a lot of pain there. Mm-hmm. Right? If you could give me something that would take away 10% of my back pain right now, I'd be excited about it. That tells you that there's something there. Okay.
Exactly.
The next thing you want to know is, who's the person who's going to make the decision? Because if the salesperson is going to need this, but the sales department head doesn't care about it because it doesn't influence their lives, they don't feel the pain enough, they're not going to buy it, then that's not a pain worth addressing because the person who's experiencing it won't pay it. I see. So tell me about colorizing it. What does colorizing actually do?
Oh, so I mean, this is just like the first thing we did. We imagine you've got all these dentists, and there's different types of dentists, right? Is this an orthodontist, or is this more of a dentist that fixes the way your teeth look, or is this more a dent and that's their focus? Like, I don't even know what that's called, like a cosmetic dentistry. Mm-hmm. Or is this more of a, you know, just a family practice? There's a million attributes.
Oh, these guys, I see. You know what? So I'm looking at the demo on your site. You still use the dentist as an example on your homepage. Mm-hmm. It's each kind of dentist work, like, each different type of dentist will get a different color. Is that what it is?
Exactly. So imagine if you were like, I'm driving out to, I'm in LA and I sell stuff to dentists, and I'm driving out to Pasadena. It's, you know, an hour and a half away from my house in Santa Monica. And I know I'm driving out to Pasadena. So show me on the map who of the 3,000 dentists in LA, show me the ones who are at least are a larger dentist office. Maybe you've got your customers, your prospects sorted into small, medium, large, and they're focused on cosmetic dentistry, not, you know, orthodontry.
I see.
And so you can kind of say, okay, make only cosmetic dentists, have them show up on the map, and now colorize them by size. And that way, I'm driving out to Pasadena, I can just glance at the map and say, okay, well, which ones are important to me, if that's what makes someone important to me? And you can do it by as many characteristics as you want, right, with filters and colorizing.
I see.
Show me who's important to me, who's on the way to Pasadena or on the way back. Well, what if I went this way on the way back? Because this guy looks really good to see. And so we help them figure out, okay, who should I focus on? How can I maximize my time in front of the best people that I'm supposed to be focused on? How do I minimize my time behind the wheel? And that was kind of the earliest things that we helped people do. And this was, you know, 5 years ago. Now we do lots of things for field salespeople, but that was the biggest pain.
If someone is selling to dentists, they could just pop into the dentist's office and say, "Hey, let me in. I've got to sell you something."
Yeah, it's field sales.
That's what field sales is, just literally knocking on doors saying, "Can I come in and show you my new thing?"
Sometimes, well, and a lot of times it'll be a mix, right? Like, so if you let's just say you sell a cleaning tool for dentists, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it could, you know, you want to know who are the, you know who the other four cleaning tool companies are. You know who's, you know, you want to keep track of which dentist is using which one.
Yeah.
You want to know how you compare to those ones. Maybe there's an especially weak competitor that if you can show a demo of the thing, you can knock them out. You want to know who bought your version 5 years ago and might be due for a re-up, right? And you can make, in field sales, they'll make appointments. Maybe out of the 10 dentists they'll see in a day, maybe two or three of them will be appointments. Like, hey, you know, I'm coming to see you to demo this thing at 10 o'clock, and you wanted to do it, and so we're going to sit down at 10 o'clock and do it. And I've got another one at, I've got another meeting at 2, and then a meeting at 5. But in between 10 and 2, you know, you want to get, you want to work on the people that you're not talking to. So you can just swing in and talk with the front desk person and kind of get in front of them.
At this point, when you come up with this idea and you've talked to customers, do you start to see riches in your head? Do you start to say, I think I got it. This is going to be the next big thing? Or are you saying something different?
I mean, I think you know you have something when a lot of people start paying for it, right? Like, and we
so it
have,
wasn't until they paid. And then when they started to pay, did you start at that point to fantasize? Did you start at that point to say, I think I might have a $100 million company here?
I mean, it's hard to say at first. I feel like when you're building something, it's always there's always light at the end of the tunnel, but you always feel like death is right around the other around the corner. So I feel like I've always been up and down on it. Like I've been like, wow, this thing's really going to make it, and then you know 2 days later I could be like, oh, we're not going to make it.
And when you think it's going to make it, what's the vision at that point?
I mean, you know, by 3 years or so into it, I knew it was going to make it.
And what do you mean by make it? Like, since we're talking so deeply about like the colors and the dentists and all the nitty gritty of business, I want to like take a step away and talk about the exciting part of it. When you think you're going to make it, what is it for you? Is it having a yacht? Is it taking your dog in the Lamborghini? I saw your picture with you and your dog. Is that what it is? What is it that for you is the pinnacle of life success?
I mean, I don't know. I don't think that business in general can be the pinnacle of life success. But
you don't.
I think it's, you know, having a successful career is important to me, and but it's not the most important thing to me. But
what is the most important then?
Well, I'd say the most important thing to me is the people in my life. So, family, close friends, people I work with closely. You know, kind of the people that I have deep relationships with, and I think that's the most important thing to me.
You know what? Call me a jerk, but for me, yeah, the people who are in my immediate family, absolutely, I feel like that's the pinnacle. Number two, it's the business and the legacy that I leave behind. Because if I just have a really good time with good friends here, right now, in the here and now, today, 2017, 2018, bah, by 2019, it's gone. I can't accumulate that in the same way. But if I spend all my time in the next 2, 5, 10, 20 years working, the legacy I have when I look back on my life in 20 years is just phenomenal. It'll outlive me when I die. That's the thing that gets me excited. Look at how I'm like jazzed. My arms are all open up. Do you ever get that way? Do you ever say, like, this could be the thing? I could be setting up my family forever. I could be doing this other thing that is really exciting. Or maybe we're two different kinds of people.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for me, it's I'd say it's what I mean. It ultimately, it gets down to like what drives you and what motivates you. And for me, I think it's less about the money. I mean, I've always kind of felt like, you know, I've always felt like I would be financially successful enough that I'd be able to provide for my family and be comfortable. I guess, you know, and what's really the difference between having $5 million or $50 million in the bank? I mean, you buy more things with 50, obviously, but like you're comfortable and safe, and your needs are taken care of either way. And
there was a movie called Barbarians at the Gate. I love the book. I love the movie on HBO. Still worth watching, about these guys who would buy businesses out. And one of the people whose business was about to be bought out from under him, he said, had this line in the movie that I memorized as a kid. It was, "Hello, Charlie. All I am is a salesman. People buy you when they buy what you're selling." I forget the lines now as I'm saying it. I don't, but I do remember that one sentence. People buy you when they buy what you're selling. Every time the cash register rings, it's validation that what you are, who you are, is strong enough and important enough that they would want it. As you're starting to see sales, even if at this point in the story, they're still in the future, do you start to feel like, yes, I am someone? What do you feel? I feel like I'm tapping into something because I see a smile on your face.
I think it really is validating to create things, and that's from a career perspective, that's what's more important to me than the money. Is I like I like mentoring people. I like leading teams. I like working with people. And I love that there's, you know, tens of thousands of people using this thing that I've created. And it's a silly, there's silly little problems that you know, busy work type problems that field salespeople have that we're solving. And, you know, people tell me all the time, you know, this has saved me 45 minutes a day. This saves me an hour a day. This saves me a half hour a day. It depends on the person, you know, but I feel like I've been able to help thousands and thousands of people, you know, do a little better in their lives and take some annoying things off their plate. And like, that feels really good. I like that I've created something. Like I've solved some stupid little problems for people, and in the process, I've grown a lot of people's careers and taught a bunch of people a lot of things, and I think that's what's really motivating to me is the ability to create stuff. That's what really gets me out of bed in the morning is the relationships with people that we help and the relationships with people that work here and just the ability to, there wasn't a thing that did this and now there's a thing and that's really exciting. Just fun.
Okay. So you're starting to get sales at this point in the story, but you still don't have a product, do you?
We're selling something. It's a crappy product. It only does one little thing at this point. And I guess to put a date on this, this is like 2013, you know, like this is like, we started the company in January 2012. So this is probably by 2013, we're making sales. It's not an impressive product. It does the very basics of what we're trying to do. We have gotten some decent sized company. I mean, we had our first Fortune 500 company using this with their whole sales team by the end of 2013.
How'd you get them?
I cold emailed a salesperson on their team over LinkedIn, and so in-mailed them, I guess, not an email, an in-mail, and that person started using it, and that was probably in, you know, early 2013, and then his manager found out about it, and so the people that reported to that manager, you know, the 10 people or whatever, started using it, and then the region started using it. It was like the Western U.S., and then they wanted it for the whole country, and so it just kind of literally from this one guy who had started using it and liked it, it spread around the whole company because he was like, oh, this is solving this problem for me. And other people were like, well, why wouldn't we all use that? That sounds great. That's going to save us a ton of time.
And that's one thing that you guys offered from the beginning, a free trial. So anyone at the organization can sign up. It doesn't have to be a full enterprise sale. And that's
right,
what got
right.
me. But so how do people even find your site other than you making cold calls to them?
So that's a big challenge. That's our biggest challenge as a company is letting the world know that we exist, right? Like how do the field salespeople are busy people and, how do we let them know, hey, we've solved like, you know, 10 little stupid problems for you. And we can just, instead of doing this all by hand, you can just, or, you know, you can do it right. Yeah. You can do it in this way. And it's really easy and it's fast. Getting their attention and letting them know this exists and that it's worth trying out and that they should actually invest their valuable time in it. That's our biggest challenge. I mean, a lot of people will use Google to search for some aspect. They'll describe the problem to Google, and Google will direct them to us with all of its little genius algorithms there. Or they'll describe it on their iPhone, like in the App Store. They'll kind of describe a problem, and Apple will direct them to us. Those are really, I mean, and really, it's word of mouth. The good thing is, if one person at a company finds out about us, and you know, because they happen to be proactive enough to Google the problem and land on our site and be like, "Oh, that's the problem I wanted fixed. Awesome." The best thing about salespeople and as being your customers is they're professional communicators. So if you create value from them, they can turn. They're really good at telling all their colleagues. The guy that they used to work with, who they still grabbed a beer with. Like, you know, they're very good at kind of communicating the value. And so we put a referral program in place where every time someone who's using our product refers another person, and that person signs up, we give the referring person $50. And that incentive alone has probably been one of our bigger growth hacks.
Really?
Yeah, just tell. I mean, we give a lot of their $50 Amazon gift cards, and we give a ton of them. I mean, and that's been one of the biggest ways we've grown is just by being like, hey, by the way, if you have any friends, you know, there's this referral program. If you tell people about this and they sign up, we'll give you $50. And people are like, oh, well, I should be telling my friends about this anyway because it's awesome. So, yeah, I'll shoot a quick email out, or I'll mention it to this guy who's a buddy of mine, or I'll tell my boss, and my boss will, you know, have me spread it around to the rest of the team. But that's been one of our biggest.
Did you guys build that in-house, or did you use an outside service like Ambassador?
We built it in-house. We've actually looked at the outside services too, and we thought about SWAT because they do some thing. It's one of these things in software. A lot of times, it's like, should I build it or should I buy it?
Yeah.
And we've actually it was literally last week. We were like, should we be? We'd probably get some more sophisticated abilities with this referral program if we swapped it out for, you know, swapped the basic thing that we set up. If we swapped it out for someone with a real program, it might be cooler because it's a piece of software, you know, like
yeah.
there are things that the professional, the ones that people built and that's their focus, they're better than the one we built. I mean, ours is pretty simple. We give you a code. If they sign up with that code, it automatically sends you an Amazon gift card. And there's, you know, simple little integration with Amazon to do that. But the actual software companies that have built these referral systems, they can do all kinds of stuff. So we're looking at that now.
You know, one thing that surprises me is that you actually were able to get a customer through InMail. I opened up LinkedIn just to look you up and see where you went to school. I see you did a semester at C. Stanford University is where you got your MBA. I'm flooded now with messages from people, and these messages are pretty empty. Hi, Andrew. Yeah. Thanks for helping budding entrepreneurs. Keep up the fantastic work. Whitney. Thanks, Whitney. Dimitri Balin. Andrew, came across your LinkedIn profile. I'm an ex-director in SQL Server product at Microsoft. Like, has nothing to do with me. I cannot believe how junked up they allowed LinkedIn to get for messages. Professional place.
It's pretty noisy at this point. I have someone on my marketing team do all my LinkedIn stuff.
Right, me too.
You know, I can't keep up with it. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I think fewer. It's depending on what your title is and kind of where you work and that sort of thing. I think you get different amounts of people reaching out to you. I mean, obviously if you run an organization over there, like people want to get in front of you. So you get a lot of this stuff. I think our target customer, like there aren't a lot of people selling stuff to field salespeople, right? So I think they get fewer things. And so what we sent to them is pretty send out or what we were sending at the time. We actually don't use emails now, but at that time, we were just sending a very clean, very simple thing. Like, hey, we have this mapping company to put your customers on a map. Like, if you'd like to check that out, here's our website. We're looking for people to kind of be in the beta group, and that worked. I mean, it got that person responded and got and was interested, and this gets back to approaching the people that have the most pain. Like when we described that concept, the people if you describe the thing that you do to the right people, they're like, oh wait, what do you do? That's really interesting. So that was key.
All right, I'm going to take a moment to talk about my second sponsor. The second sponsor is a company called HostGator. HostGator is a place where you can, frankly, get your website hosted. So many people who I've interviewed in the past have said that they signed up for HostGator. The other thing that I don't like is now phone calls. Look at this, constant phone calls. Somebody showed me how I can send every single phone call that I get directly to voicemail. I did it. I turned it off the other day for a reason. I forget who was supposed to call. Oh, my accountant. And I forgot to turn it back on. I got to turn it back on. You getting a lot of junk calls, by the way?
Yeah, I've actually got to switch my cell phone number now because someone on our finance team like applied for like a loan earlier this year, and they used my cell phone by accident. And now like it just like so from there it just got out into the world,
yep.
And so now the thing just rings and rings and rings. One thing that helped there's several of these products. The one that I use is called Nomo Robo.
Yeah, it was created by Mixergy fan. I complained a while back. He said, "Look what I'm creating." He sent it over.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
I got that on my phone. It helps.
Oh,
you gotta tell people
a lot.
What that
yeah,
is.
I mean, it catches a lot of the spammy calls, not all of them, but it really reduced it.
And
I'm
it's a
still
plugin
gonna
for
to...
the phone. It interacts with the phone. I can't believe Apple allows plugins on top of phones. I didn't hear anything about it until I installed Nomo Robo. It sits there,
yeah.
And then it looks to see what seems like a spammy call, and it sends it to voicemail if that's
what
you choose, or it
alerts
you.
They're capturing, and I've reported things as spammy calls before that they didn't catch, and they're looking at the numbers like, oh, spammy calls come from this number, and so it's pretty cool. I think it catches a lot of them.
The one thing it should do is just say, here's a setting to let you send every call to voicemail except the ones that are in your address book. I know the guy. I should just tell him that. Every call into voicemail, and frankly, voicemail is not like such a bad thing anymore because most of your friends, if they get voicemail, are just going to text you and say, you free? The people who you want to do business with might leave voicemail, but now on iPhone and I think even on Android, you actually get a transcription of your voicemail. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love it.
Right. So who cares? I'll send everyone to voicemail. All right. So here it is. It's hostgator.com. If you're looking to build a website, there is, you know what I was going to say? There's no cheaper way to do it. I'm sure there's some cheapo like fly-by-night site that's going to host you for less money than this. But they're charging $3.48 a month for basic hosting. The next level up, which is the one that I recommend everyone sign up for, is $4.98 a month. You get unlimited domains. You could be sitting here with me listening to this interview, come up with an idea, and just go put it on there. It won't cost you any extra to host the site. Maybe what you want to do is have a list of all the top tools for blocking phone calls or all the different mail scripts for getting through to people on LinkedIn InMail. You just have an idea. You sit down with a drink and you start creating it. One step, one click install of WordPress so that you can get your website up and running for free easily, all part of your hosting plan. Get a free theme. In fact, they give you a bunch of free themes, but you can find a bunch of other ones on the internet. And then you just start creating whatever idea you have. The beauty of unlimited domains, and this is why I want you guys to sign up for the second level up. The beauty of unlimited domains is when you're not thinking, I'm going to have to pay a little extra for this, a little extra for that, you just sit and get creative and you just let yourself go. It's kind of like I went only on one cruise my whole life and they had unlimited food. At first, I would just eat a little bit. You know, I say, I've got a diet. I'm watching what I'm eating. I'm putting it all into this app. By the second day, I stopped putting anything into my app and I ate everything, French fries, whatever they had, the whole thing. Same thing here. You sign up for this unlimited domain hosting package. You'll come up with an idea in the shower tomorrow. You'll go and you implement it right away. You see what happens. I've said this for years. Mixergy was supposed to be an event hosting site. You were going to come to my site and find an event and go there. I had this idea that I wanted to start doing interviews with people who were coming to my event. I had unlimited hosting. So I just created blog.mixergy.com and it became my place where I was going to interview people. I started interviewing them. I loved it so much. I made that my main business. When you have unlimited, that's what you can do. I urge you guys to go check out this special URL. It's hostgator.com/mixergy. They're going to give you 50% off their already low prices. Start with the cheapest one. Once your business really gets cranking, then up it. In fact, not the cheapest, sorry, the second from the cheapest. It doesn't matter to me. I don't get paid any more or less whether you go for the cheapest or the second. But the second from the cheapest, the one with unlimited domains, is the one I recommend. It'll allow you to get started right, inexpensively, and then as you keep building, you'll be able to grow. And they have tons of other plans beyond that, including WordPress managed hosting if you want them to make sure that you don't get viruses and that your site is up and backed up, the whole thing. All right, go to that URL, sign up, and let me know what you guys build. Okay, speaking of sales, you're starting to get sales. You're starting to do well with this business. Talk about the development. I know that hiring the right person was really important. How'd you find that person who was going to help lead the development?
So Google had a list of a lot of the people. So I knew kind of the characteristics of the developer that I was going to need to get this thing off the ground, and I could only afford one at first while I worked on funding the business and stuff. So Google had a list of people that had indicated interest and talent in working with the Google Maps API, and it was a public list. It wasn't like a secret list or anything. They had created this little quiz or something that like had tested people and shown that they were interested and knew a lot about it, and posted it somewhere. And someone that I knew at Google told me about it, and so I went through that list and looked everybody up on LinkedIn and kind of figured out there were probably like 120 people that I was kind of looking at initially as I was vetting people for it to be the first engineering hire. And then I kind of boiled it down based on different characteristics and different skill sets and kind of who looked right. And then I interviewed a bunch of them and talked with a bunch of them, met with a bunch of them, worked with a few of them on little kind of mini engagements. And through doing that, I eventually kind of met the guy that I ended up bringing on, and he really built the thing. Because I don't code. I focus on the business side of the company. That was a key early hire for me to get someone who was really great at this.
How were you able to pay him?
So we raised some money early on from friends and family, and there was founder money. I put money into the business.
How much?
I probably put in like over the probably like $600K into the company.
Wow.
And then
and you so, made that by selling for Google?
Well, yeah. I mean, I was pretty – I had gone – when I started the company, I was probably like 33 or so. So I'd done a lot in my career already. I'd worked for IBM, and I'd worked for a software company called Autonomy, and then I'd worked at Google, and in sales is an interesting career path, right? Like if you're good at it, you're paid for your performance usually, right? So if you're good at it, they really pay you out, and you know I'd at Google I was I'd been their top salesperson 1 year, and the plans are really set up for if you sell a lot of stuff, they pay you out. So
what made you such a good salesperson for them?
You know, that's interesting. People ask me that. You know, I had a very successful sales career, and I don't think it's because I'm the best salesperson out there. I think there are a lot of salespeople that are way more talented than me. I think that what I had going for me from a sales perspective was I'm good at listening to people, and I'm good at I understood their businesses. I have a business background, and so when I was I understood their business. I focused on understanding their businesses and kind of understanding what the thing that I was selling, how it was going to impact their business, and I could keep the conversation focused on business value, and that helped me sell a lot more stuff, I think, than the average guy.
And so you started this, you were starting to make some sales, things were starting to go okay, but still 2014, you guys were scraping bottom. You'd mm-hmm. already been in this business for 2 years. Things were going so poorly that the guy that there was some guy you helped who helped you start this business. He decided, you know what? I'm done, Steven. I'm going back to work. Am I right?
Yeah. So we started out with two co-founders and you know, me being one of them and a good friend of mine being the other. And 2014, the business was not doing well. It was, you know, we're losing probably 20 grand a month or so, and we just weren't able to acquire customers. Weren't able to acquire customers at the same rate to keep up with our expenses, which is a big business problem, right? if costs are greater than revenue, you have a problem. You have a problem on the horizon, and we were really just kind of scraping along in 2014, not making enough money, not selling enough stuff. And the reason was the product just wasn't mature enough. It wasn't. We had solved some basic problems, but they weren't big enough problems for a lot of people. And we had a lot of problems with the product. It would choke on itself, that sort of thing. And it's just, you know, there's a lot of reasons why it's hard to get the word out, and it's hard to win sales when you're a small company, especially big sales. Because our product's relatively inexpensive, right? It's $9 or $35 a month, depending on which version you're getting. And
yeah, why'd you sell it for so little?
Well, there's two philosophies, right? There's in software, you can sell stuff for a lot of money and only a few people will buy it, or you can sell it for a little money and a lot of people will buy it. And because people are often pretty price sensitive, and we've found that our user is pretty price sensitive. You know, $9 or $35 per person does add up. So we don't make a lot of money when that first person of the company buys it. But then once you make that person successful and all of a sudden their VP of sales hears about it and they buy it for 300 people, that becomes a six-figure deal, right? So it's worth it to go, you know, $35 a month for one person, but then the little ones bring the big ones in this case. And so that was kind of the – I think we're priced right. I think we're priced, you know, in a fair way. And it's an amount of money where as soon as – if people have this problem and the or any of the problems that we solve and they look at it and they're like, oh, well, that's – I mean, I'm going to save – 45 minutes a day or an hour and a half day or 30 minutes a day, whatever it is, like it, we're going to save them some time and make some things easier for them. They're going to be able to spend that time selling more or what with whatever, right? It's just, it's worth, their time is worth way, you know, an hour a day is worth $35 a month. Basically it's a no brainer, right? Because these are highly compensated individuals, right?
Yeah.
Sales people. So
$30 is nothing for something like this.
Yeah, it's really cheap, but you know, people don't like to pay for individuals don't love paying for
they
software.
They don't. And you know what? And they don't for some reason feel comfortable asking their bosses to go pay for this to try it out. Mm-hmm. I had a similar experience here at Mixergy. Right. Someone on the team said we need project management software. They went and they tried Asana, why Asana as opposed to something else? Why didn't I said, did you guys even consider these other alternatives? They didn't, because Asana is free. And so they right. don't have to worry about like charging me money or feeling awkward asking us to pay for it. And I keep saying, software is nothing. You guys are expensive. If yeah. for an extra $30, $100 a month, if I make you 10% more effective, it's worth my money.
Yeah. Oh,
but absolutely. They still feel guilty about doing it. It's weird, mm-hmm. right? But if it's yeah. like free or inexpensive, they say, all right, mm-hmm. I'll just do it. And they go for it. Very, yeah. very strange. I feel like Basecamp is making a big mistake by not having that free version, even if it's just like enough for you to play with on your own, because otherwise people have to pay $100 just to try Basecamp. And who on the team feels comfortable saying to the boss, every year you're going to have to pay $1,200 because I want to experiment with this thing.
Right, right. It's freemium's tricky, right? Like you know, if you put your product out, some aspect or some part of your product out there for free, you certainly get a lot more people using it. The challenge is how many of those can you turn into paying customers? Our balance on this was we have a free trial, and you know, generally it's like, I forget what we're given now, like 10 or 12 days or something of free trial. So we give people the opportunity to kick the tires in the full product, and then they can decide, yeah, I want to pay for this. This is going to save me a half hour a day or an hour and a half a day, whatever it is. This is going to save me time. I'm going to make more money with it. It's worth the $35. We give them that opportunity, but we don't have a freemium version. There's not like a free version of Badger that they can just keep using and get some subset of the features forever for free. But I don't love the freemium model. I get why Basecamp doesn't do it, but at the same time, I think, you know, you're right. It keeps a lot of people from ever even trying it. 'Cause like, oh, I can't buy something like this. My boss isn't going to like it. I don't want to have that conversation. A lot of salespeople actually, they swipe the credit card, and one reason we're at $35 is a lot of people can swipe up to 50 without like putting it through account,
oh, is that right?
Getting approvals. Yeah, so 50 is a big hurdle. If you're charging $51, they would have to go get approvals. Whereas if you're $49, they can just swipe it and nobody really checks up on it. It's like, oh, it's $49 a month, no one cares. But if it was 51, that needs approvals. So 50 is a big pricing hurdle in software in general.
I feel like companies should have an education fund, like go pay this amount of money every year to go buy something that's going to teach you how to be better at your job or grow as a person, and a software fund. Spend this much money to go experiment. A couple hundred bucks a month, just go experiment and tell us if something ends up improving the way that you do your job so that everyone else on the team can sign up for it. All right, but I can see then how your $9 a month plan would allow people to do that. And I can also see, frankly, why you were struggling in 2014. So what you're saying to me is, look, we were struggling in 2014 because we worked really hard. We'd get a sale, but that sale would only be worth a few bucks a month. And a few bucks a month does not add up when you're talking at this level. Was the solution just that it started to catch up because more people were telling their bosses, other team members were joining, and then things like they took off the SaaS way?
Exactly. Yeah. So in 2014, we just didn't have that much reach. By 2015, people were really hearing about it and people were really signing up and using it. And so we were able to start hiring. You know, in 2014, we had, you know, five people at the company and one left. So we were down to four. And I guess that was actually the beginning of 2014. That was like January that he left. So all of 2014, we were down to four. And then most of 2015, we still had four. And then, you know, towards the end of 2015, we kind of broke into, we kind of hit an inflection point where the business was really growing faster, and a lot more people were hearing about it and buying it. And so we started hiring. And so since, you know, so that's, I guess, almost exactly 2 years ago. So we were at four people, and now we're at like, you know, 60. So it's been a fast, it's been fast growth since then.
Where are revenues now?
They're at, $2.3 million a year.
Wow. All right. And SaaS is good that way, right?
$35 a month at a time.
Shocking. But it does kind of build up because it's SaaS. Here's the one thing that I wonder, though, with your product. A lot of times what keeps people in SaaS, like I was paying for WooFoo forms for 5 years after I stopped using them because something breaks. I don't know what's going to break. There's a form somewhere that would break. And so I finally, after 5 years, I asked my assistant, please go make sure we have no more forms on the site that are using WooFoo forms, and then cancel the membership. It's very painful for me, but go do it. She did it. I said, and then a few months later, I needed some data that was in some form. I said, oh, Did you delete the forms? Yes, you forgot to export some of the form data, so it was gone. You don't have that. That's the one downside of your product, that it's still charging SaaS prices, but there's nothing that breaks if I stop paying.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's why it's important that we create a lot of value for our customers. If we're, and our customers use this thing every time they go into the field, right? So if you're someone who goes into the field even twice a week and the other 3 days you're in the office, if this is something that you really makes your time in the field a lot more effective, and a lot of the tools that we've put in this thing really seem to, people really like what they do. We have to create value, and I guess Wufoo wasn't creating value for you, that it was just sticky because your stuff was in it. But I mean, you're right. I mean, if we don't create value, people will stop paying for us. But actually, very few people stop paying for this. Once they're on, they're on, and it's not because they're stuck on it. It's just because once we start solving, you know, we solve 10 problems, and different people have different problems and different at different levels. So whichever one that we're, or some people use all our features, some people only use one of our features. And even if one of them is creating a bunch of value for you, you're not going to stop using it, right? People don't tend to leave.
Yeah, that is why SaaS is so good. It's not very expensive. And as long as they're there and it's not stinking, and it's useful, they're going to keep stinking around. Hey, I was spying on you to see where you got your traffic. I saw that you got some of your traffic from MapPoint Alternative. Apparently, Microsoft stopped supporting something called MapPoint, and so you guys are being referred by that site.
MapPoint was Microsoft had two mapping products, MapPoint and Streets and Trips, and they are both like CDs that you would buy, put in your computer, and you could do a lot of the same things that we do. And they stopped supporting those products in 2014, coincidentally, right when our business really started taking off. Possible potential correlation there.
I see.
but they had these mapping tools that salespeople and other people that needed mapping on their PCs would use. But they obviously, you know, Microsoft's super smart. They saw, hey, things are moving towards mobile, things are moving towards APIs. We don't want to be supporting all these CDs and boxes anymore. It's not the future. And so they killed a lot of those products, and including both Streets and Trips and MapPoint. And so, you know, Google is smart enough that if you Google MapPoint alternatives or Streets and Trips alternatives, or, you know, what do I do now that MapPoint is canceled? How do you describe it to Google? Yeah, we show up as kind of.
Do you guys own the website MapPoint-alternative.com? That's one of the top referrals for you.
I don't think so. I'd have to check on that. I mean, we do own a bunch of websites around the web
that kind of refer traffic to you.
Well, I think there's probably 3,000 sites or something that different people control or own, like your site, right? Like after we do this, I presume that you on your website there'll be a link somewhere to us, and we've done a ton of things like this, and there have been a million articles about the company and about, you know, what we do, or about me, or about something, and all those different things kind of send us stuff. And so some media company might do an article about routing and they'll include us. One of our best referral sources is this company called Handshake.
And yes, I see that. What is Handshake? That's one of your top sources, like you
said. It's one of our top sources of referrals because I don't know exactly what they do, but it's some kind of product for salespeople. And they did an analysis of us and two of our competitors, and they just, you know, for, you know, just to,
I see,
they're creating content for the purpose of generating traffic to their site, and so they, on their blog, they did like a routing for salespeople blog, and they looked at us and two of our competitors, and that's one of the top results. If you like, it comes up above us often. Because if you search, you know, what are the best routing apps for field salespeople? That article that they wrote on their blog is a top result for that. And so that refers us a ton of traffic.
I thought maybe that was some kind of tool that you guys are baked into. I couldn't figure it out. I get it now. Yeah.
No, we have no relationship with them. They just, you know, they probably had some intern on their marketing team, right? The 5 years ago. And they clearly did their homework. I mean, they analyzed the space and they were like, here are the top three players. And, you know, they're not even really biased about it. They're not like, hey, Badger's the best one. They've got our two competitors on there but I assume everyone that's clicking through to ours is also clicking through to theirs and kind of evaluating which one they like the best. And
you know what, this was written a couple of maybe 3 years ago at this point. And man, people in the comments actually cared. There were salespeople who believed one way or the other very strongly.
Oh, yeah?
I see. All right.
Well, there you go. Yeah. So that's, you know, and there's little nuggets like that all over the web, right? There's, you know, and that's,
I thought maybe you were buying some of these domain names, because here's why I thought that. When I went to mappoint-alternative.com, I saw that it was Google Domains that it was bought through. And I thought, here's a guy who worked for Google Domains. Of course he'd be using Google to buy one of these domains. And then it was private. And so I couldn't figure it out. So I see. All right. Why don't I close it out with this? I asked you before we started, how do I make this a win for you? You said, look, you probably don't have a lot of field salespeople listening to Mixergy, but if you want to help out, I'm still a salesperson. Why don't we offer a discount? So let's do it. What's the discount? I get no cut of this, but what is the discount that you want to offer?
Sure, yeah.
To who,
no,
and how?
You know, if any, just have any of your listeners mention Mixergy when they, if anyone out there knows field salespeople or are in field sales, let them know that we exist. It may be super helpful to them. And when you do that, just tell them to mention Mixergy and we'll give them 2 months free of the product just to play around with it, make sure it's a good fit for them and, you know, kick the tires on the thing and just as a benefit for enduring listening to me for an hour here.
Well, hopefully it wasn't enduring. It was useful. Guys, if you got anything of value, please let them know. Do you want to give out your email address? Is there a way for people to contact you?
Sure, yeah. You can contact me over LinkedIn.
Guys, will you actually see your LinkedIn? No, your assistant will.
My assistant will, yeah. but you can email me too. I'm steve@badgermapping.com.
Okay, I don't think you're going to get a bunch of junk mail from our people. I think you're going to get some solid people. All right, guys, go check it out. Badgermapping.com. You guys also own badgermaps.com. You're going to soon start to redirect
we
from there.
We do. Yeah, we initially put ourselves on badgermapping.com and then we you know, a year later or something, we're like, oh, we should buy all the domains around this thing. And someone had already bought up badgermaps.com just to, like, you know, because they thought they could make us pay for it or
and
something.
Did you guys pay for it?
Later. No. If you have trademark on something, you can claw a domain back. So you can say, hey, we've got a trademark on this. So if they had badger.com, our trademark wouldn't be able to pull that back. But Badger Maps, we have trademark.
I see now. And you know what? Badgermaps.com does redirect properly to badgermapping.com. All right. Whether you guys go check out badgermaps.com or badgermapping.com, please go check it out. And if you do sign up, let them know you heard about them on Mixergy. And of course, the two sponsors that I mentioned are the company that makes me feel less lonely as an entrepreneur, because I actually have Jack on my side. The guy is helping me look through every contract that I need or every business decision that I need help with, largely when I have some finance decisions to make. I hired him through TopTal, where I also hired a great developer and a great designer. Go check him out at toptal.com/Mixergy. Top is your head. Top is on top of your head. Tal is in talent.com/Mixergy. And if you want a website hosting that's done right, even if you hate, especially if you hate your current hosting company, you owe it to yourself to go check out HostGator. HostGator.com/Mixergy. People have been really happy with them, and that's why I continue to run ads for both companies. Thank you so much for being on here. All right. Thank you all. Bye.